broadcasting from inside the Jim Butler Ballroom of the beautiful Mitzvah Hotel. KFAB and Twyla's Pack and Tack Shop is proud to present Drive Time Tonopah with your hosts, Faye and Brenda.
Tiny bubble.
I'm Faye.
And I'm Brenda Boo.
And this is part two of the great vacation adventure, I guess. What did you call it in the end?
The last episode, I named it Broadcasting from an Undisclosed Location. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So are we going to release the location of the undisclosed location on this episode of Drive Time Tonopah?
You actually already did. You spilt the beans in that last episode. You said Hawaii.
Right.
Which island were you on?
The island of Oahu.
Ooh.
And we stayed mostly in the area known as Waikiki.
Oh, cool.
Which is the tourist section and the hotel section of Oahu. Very lovely.
Did you get burnt at all?
I got a little bit burnt when I was out paddling around on one of those stand-up paddle boards.
Oh, wow.
I was quite the athlete. I was running circles around Mr. Anderson.
Really? Now, you have to tell us about that. But let's do this kind of sequentially, because I want to ask you some preliminary questions.
And I just want to make clear to our listeners that the last episode, you were calling me, we were talking as I was walking out the door to catch my plane.
Yes, what about
it? And now the adventure is over, and I'm just about to snuggle down into bed to go to back to work for my first day.
Hmm.
Getting all relaxed, and then there's Brenda Bailey. Oh, tell me what you did. What did you do? Where did you go? Where have you been, Mr. Mouse? Couldn't even see the Queen?
Could you get a different voice for me? You sound like such a nag. My God. I do just randomly call you when you're not expecting it and demand updates on your life, don't I?
This is not unusual. That's correct.
Good Lord.
It's not exactly as bad as I make it out to be, but but this is certainly bookending my vacation in a most unique way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you went there not just with Mr. Anderson, but with a melee of Andersonites.
Yes.
How many were there altogether?
In the end, 9 people.
Gee, many. How did you guys ever...
Oh, and a baby, 10.
And a baby. How old of a baby?
Like a year and 6 months or something like that.
That's a little baby.
Yeah.
How did this idea all come together that you thought it would be a good idea to get together with this many people that you're related to by marriage?
Well, actually, the first time we went to Waikiki, which was in 2010 or 2009, somewhere around there, it was for the wedding of one of Mr. Anderson's nieces.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a kind of a popular spot. They kind of go there a lot. So they were there again this year. And Mother Anderson is a close family member, and she was there for the wedding. So a lot of the people who were there for the original wedding were there for this trip too. It's kind of like an annual family vacation for all of the Anderson clan.
Ah, okay. When you first brought it up, I thought, oh wow, this must be some kind of big trip of a lifetime, but it sounds like it's more of an annual event.
Well, it is for some of the people who went, and it's a bit special because Mother Anderson has been having some serious medical health issues the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of a big vacation for her after getting through some surgery and stuff like that. So kind of all of our eyes are tuned toward Mother Anderson to make sure that she's okay and she's recovering.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to have a nice vacation with her as well. So we all sort of chipped in and made sure that we were there for Mother Anderson, too.
Right.
Not just to celebrate this annual wedding or to go on annual vacation.
How did she hold up? She looked very happy and relaxed in the pictures you shared with us on Twitter.
Yes, no, she's doing extremely well. Just so people know, Mother Anderson has been battling cancer the last year, and she's finished chemotherapy treatments and had surgery and all that kind of stuff. So she's just on the rebound and recovering from all of that, and it really beats the hell out of you, as you're probably aware.
Mm-hmm.
So she's doing fantastically. She's in good spirits, and she's healing, and she's getting better all the time. So, yeah, she did great. She's very active to begin with, so she wanted to be active, and we were able to accommodate her. So I think she had a great time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys are close because you worked with her before you ever met Mr. Anderson, right? So that's nice that you have a good relationship with your mother-in-law.
Yeah, no, it's a great family, and I enjoy being around them and being with them all the time. Yeah, we are very close.
Well, it looked like it. It really looked like you were having a really good time. You looked really relaxed, like you were comfortable being around all these people.
Yes. No, it was a great vacation. I will say I did have a very nice time. We did lots of fun things. I was able to relax a little bit, and I enjoyed myself a lot.
So I interrupted you about your talking about standing on this board. Tell us some of the very, what might be called, typical Hawaii touristy things that you did.
Yes, so Mr. Anderson and I were the terrorist tourists of, you know, the classical get in the way of everybody else and be the annoying tourist. But you know that place, Waikiki, is loaded with those people.
So oh, yeah.
They're used to us knuckleheads being around there. It's a very touristy location. So we weren't really out of place. So we did things such as we went to museums. I did a planetarium, which I enjoyed. Two shows at a planetarium talking about space and Earth and the planets and all that kind of stuff. That was fun. That's not extremely Hawaii touristy, but it is interesting. We went to a museum where there were all kinds of these beautiful Asian works, and every continent was represented in this museum. It was a huge complex, and some really interesting carvings and historical pieces, and it was also some contemporary pieces in this museum. So I really enjoyed being around that museum.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the more Hawaii-style touristy things we did was, we rented these paddle boards where you go out on the water and you have an oar and a big surfboard that you can stand on, and it floats really good. And so we doodled around on that and got sunburnt doing that.
Did you fall off, or was it easy to keep your balance on that thing?
Neither of us fell off.
Really?
In fact, I was out there helping people and coaching them. There was one woman who was pointed the wrong way, and she had a bad oar. Like, her oar was too long for her body length, and I steadied her board while she turned around and got faced the right way, and I gave her my shorter pole, my shorter oar, and took her longer one, and was coaching her, do this, do that.
Was this a stranger, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, sure.
Oh, okay.
I just walked, go up to anybody. Well, she was having such a hard time because she was backwards and she was trying to row this thing, but the rudder is, for her, was in the front.
Oh.
So she was trying to row, but the rudder would make her point off kilter all the time, right? So, idiots, you got to have the rudder at the back, right? Steering wheel at the front. So anyway, I felt like helping her because she was having such a hard time.
That was nice of you.
There were lots of people who did fall, and it was quite funny, but but Mr. Anderson never fell, and I never fell, and I had a great time beetling around. It was interesting to me because there's quite a bit of dynamics involved, like there's a lot of physics involved with rowing one of these things and standing up.
Yeah.
And you lean your weight to one side, you can make the arc of the board keep you straight as you're rowing.
What was the current like? Or the waves? Was it Was it pretty calm? Or?
Yeah, no, it was all in an enclosed little lagoon, so it was for junior, beginner, idiots, so it was really easy for me anyway, and for most of us, because there was no wave bigger than the eyeball of a fish, you know?
Oh. So what was the water like there? Was it clean and clear?
It was beautiful. You know, some places are nicer than others, but if you go up the coast of Oahu, just a little bit out of the city, the scenery is just amazing. It's remarkable. The water is many different shades of blue, you know, cyans and deep blues and greens. It's just unbelievable. And white sands and blue sky and green mountains. It was just remarkable.
Was the water cool, or was it... probably was pretty warm, wasn't it?
Comparatively, very warm.
Like, yeah.
Very, very easy to swim in.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit cold, but like anything, once you got into it and started moving around, it was very nice, but definitely probably warmer than your pool.
Or the water's up in the Canada.
Yeah, definitely here off of Vancouver. It's frigid here.
So did you look down on the beach and see a beautiful shell and say, that's the one for Brenda, and pick
it up? The funny thing is, it was hard to find shells, but I did find some little trinkets that someone would be receiving, yes.
Oh, yay!
More coral than shells, though. It was hard to find an intact, nice-looking shell, but, you know, I got something anyway.
Yay, thank you. How many days did you go swimming?
Three or four swims altogether, or half in the ocean, half in the pool. The pool is much easier because it's not salty water and you don't have to deal with the sand in your toes and all that. But
yeah. You know, we went to, up on the East Coast, we were in Norfolk, Virginia, and we had a hotel that was right on the ocean, and everything in the room was moist because...
Yes.
Was that the way your hotels were?
Yeah, definitely. Everything was humid, and your swim shorts would dry out, but many things felt moist.
Mm-hmm.
Even napkins, a fresh napkin out of the dispenser was like limp. You know,
right?
Which I liked. I mean, I'm fine with that. That doesn't really bother me.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there where it's been actually hotter than it was right now. It was a comfortable 85 to 95 degrees, and that's, like, just right. That's, like, my favorite temperature, I think.
Mm.
It was just right. But I have been there when it's been so hot and muggy and overbearing, like this cloud or this mist or moisture is just everywhere. So I know what that's like, but it wasn't really... I didn't find it that bad, but definitely the humidity was present.
Did it feel like you're on an island, or did it just feel like... You're just adjacent to the ocean. I mean, I know it's too big. It's not like you could see from side to side. But
when you were in the city, we were in Waikiki, which is not the downtown, but I call it the downtown. You know, from my perspective, it's the down. It was our main location. And Waikiki is very tourist-oriented. There's all kinds of hotels. There's really extremely sexy, overpriced, fantastic, gorgeous hotels. And then there's cheaper hotels. And even in Waikiki, you can find crappy hotels. So there's a wide range. Within about, you know, maybe an 18 to 20 square block area, you go from this really elitist sort of magnificent, heavy, like really rich type shopping areas like Prada and Gucci and Breitling watches and all those, that kind of thing. Waikiki is sort of bookended by really elite areas, and then in the middle and one edge of it is where everybody who can afford to go to Hawaii goes. Who can barely afford to go to Hawaii goes, right?
Right.
You have your cheaper hotels and whatever. So it felt very city oriented because it was very, it's quite busy. There's a lot of traffic and the parking is horrible there. If you go to Waikiki, I would recommend not getting a car. But we can talk about that later. It's got a lot of hustle and bustle. And then there's a section where it's just all this beach. And you see a lot of people coming from the beach or heading to the beach. And everyone is really relaxed. And they're all wearing shorts and T-shirts. And there's this really relaxed vibe to it. But yet you feel the business of the day carrying on around you, whether you want it or not, right?
Mm-hmm. Did you get yourself one of those Hawaiian shirts to bring home?
No.
No?
No, because I've had Hawaiian shirts before, and they just sit in the closet for 2 years.
Yeah, they don't really look like your style.
No. I do have one or two, though.
Do you? How did your head hold up in the sun? Because you just got your new coiffure before you left.
Actually, pretty good. I was very anal about staying out of the sun and not getting sunburnt, so I did pretty good. I didn't come back with any kind of magnificent tan or anything like that. I got a mild sunburn from when we were out on the water a lot and when we were walking around town.
Mm-hmm.
You probably in 2 weeks, if you look at me, you wouldn't think that I was in Hawaii. But my head got a little red.
I bet.
Some areas of my body got red, but I did okay.
I noticed Mr. Anderson had on his standard issue hat in one of the pictures. He's very fair, too.
Yes, very fair.
Mm-hmm.
No, we had to go and find that hat. That was the first business,
first
order of the day, was locating farmer hat for Mr. Anderson.
I thought that was one I'd seen him wear before.
Well, he has the identical. He has the identical hat already.
Okay.
But he didn't want to bring that one with him because I give him such a hard time about it.
Oh.
He knows I hate that hat.
Oh.
So he wouldn't bring it on the hopes that he would get a nicer hat when he got back to Hawaii, but he just got the same shitty hat.
Oh.
Slightly nicer because it has more beads on it.
Oh.
And I think it was $2 more this time than it was 2 years ago.
And he noticed that, did he?
Oh, yeah. So Mr. Anderson is very frugal.
Yes.
So that was another part of the adventure that was such a treat.
Oh, so you mean you weren't just throwing caution to the wind and saying, I'll get the most expensive thing on the menu. There's much discussion about prices every time.
Yeah, you know, it pains Mr. Anderson to have to crack open his wallet, so... You know, we always have to try to be as frugal as possible.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was the odd time when I just said, enough. I'm spending $40 on a steak. I do need to tell you about this experience. There's all the bloody family there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you must understand, they're all relatives of Mr. Anderson, okay? Now, Mr. Anderson is not the most, how can I say this? He has trouble remembering things. So trying to plan something and saying, okay, we're going to be here at this time. We're going for dinner at this location at this time. Just be there, right?
Mm-hmm.
He forgets. And you have to reiterate constantly. Remember, we're going to dinner at this location at this time here. This is a problem that I face in my daily life with Mr. Anderson. By going on vacation with a bunch of other Andersons who all suffer from the same malady. It was like herding cats to get these people to be anywhere at a specific time.
Oh, no.
Now, you can imagine how I might react to something like this.
Right? I can, yes, personally imagine how you might react.
I'm telling you, this was my biggest challenge. You know, I can get 6 fire trucks to an address within 6 minutes at the drop of a hat.
Right.
If you think I could get 4 couples to meet at a restaurant at the right place at the right time, it's like fucking impossible.
I can... Jesus. So, at what point in the vacation had you had enough wrangling of the Anderson family?
I don't know. Well, there were like 3 occurrences where I had to try to get, you know, for my own purposes, I felt we needed to be at this place at this time. You know,
mm-hmm.
These appointments. I had 3 or maybe 4 of them. And at one point, I had just lost my whole mind.
Mm-hmm.
Lost complete patience. And we had gone out for a day trip out up island. And Mother Anderson was nattering in my ear all, you know, all day. And Mr. Anderson was in the back of the car nattering. Should we go there? It looks a little expensive. Let's drive 8 miles to save a dollar.
Uh-huh.
And we got back to the hotel and we're trying to meet everyone. Okay, we're going to do this. We're going to go to this place for dinner at 5:30. Okay, we'll see you there. And we all, I had lost, really, it's hard for me to explain. I had completely lost all patience for everybody. And I just said, okay, fine, goodbye, I'm done. We'll see you there when we see you there. Don't ask me any more questions.
I'm
not speaking.
Oh, I know you love to answer questions. It's one of your favorite things to do. So did you lose it, or did you just kind of shut down when you say you lost all your patience?
No, I didn't lose it, but what happens is they all stand around with their thumbs up their ass, and I'm trying to go, okay, I'm calculating out, I've got 45 minutes to get home, get changed, get some nice fresh clothes because I've been in the hot, humid weather, frying my ass all day on the beach and all that. And I was like, I'm all logistics, right?
Uh-huh.
And so people would ask, would people wanted to yak at me and stuff like that, and I'm just like, I'm not talking. I'm just no more talking. Let's just tell me where we're supposed to be and what time. That's all I want to know. Answer my questions.
Oh,
okay, I'm done. Goodbye.
I've been told to hush more than once in a while by you. I can't talk now, Brenda. I'm driving.
I had that question, too. We helped one of the niece and nephew couples get from the airport to their hotel because we had a car and they didn't, yada, yada, yada. Big logistic problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here we are in this little dinky convertible, and there's me with my gigantic suitcase because I'm gay. There's a girl with her gigantic suitcase because she's a 24-year-old girl with 55 dresses. So we're trying to cram all these suitcases into this dinky little car, and I'm stressed out. I don't know where I'm going because I'm in some hotel somewhere, and the girl's in the back going, so tell me, are you still working in 911? And tell me how, what's that like? Is that stressful? No, but getting to the fucking hotel in Hawaii at midnight is.
Oh, my. Did you keep your social face on, or did you let it crack a little bit?
I was polite. I said, well, listen, I'm really going to concentrate on my driving right now. We can talk about my work later, if you don't mind.
Right?
I shut her down, politely.
Shut her down. Oh, dear. You know, when we talked before you went, I had said specifically, I said, you know, you're not responsible for all these people, but apparently you were.
No, I know, and I wasn't really. I mean,
yeah,
we had our separate times, and it was a nice vacation because we didn't spend every waking minute together, but we spent enough time with our family, and it was nice. It was really good.
Mm-hmm. Well, it helps if you have your own hotel room. You know, you can kind of disappear. Yeah. It's not like people who come to your house and are in your house.
Right.
Although, I'll never forget when we were at the first time we were visiting, and you were, like, in the kitchen or something, and I was in another room, and all of a sudden you just said, some people think just because they're visiting, they have to spend every waking moment together. I was just...
Did I say that?
Yes, you did. I wonder who he's talking to. That made me laugh. Anyway,
let me tell you about the other places we went. We went to, there's a big war machine there in America. You know, you live there. You're probably aware of the military presence that just is everywhere you go in America. So we went to the war section of the island, Pearl Harbor.
Mm.
And we had a couple of tours of war machines. We went on a submarine.
Oh, what was that like?
There is really interesting, actually. I very much enjoyed it. So, you know, they have this old submarine that's famous, the USS Bowfin, I think.
Can I ask you, we had gone someplace where they had a submarine where you could go through it, and the only way to get into it was, like, down from the top, and you had to take is that how you got in, like a real steep ladder?
Yeah, it was actually the real submarine, and you had to climb down the hatch and... And work your way through. You start at the back and work your way all the way up through all the little doorways and portholes and galleys and areas. It was very interesting.
Could you do that? Could you be underwater like that for an extended period of time, do you think?
I think I could do it, but, oh, what a horrible life it would be.
Yeah.
So we went there, and we went to the... oh, now people are going to be so mad at me because I don't remember the names of these famous warships.
Did you see the Arizona?
Yeah, the USS Arizona. That was unbelievable. Just what a remarkable piece of machinery. Just from a mechanical standpoint, what an amazing vessel. Like, it was very cool. I really enjoyed it.
How far underneath the water is that? It's not that far, is it? Because you can walk over the way they have the memorial set up. You can look down and see the boat, right? Or the ship. It's not a boat, but you can
see
it.
Yeah, no, sorry. I'm confused then. I didn't see the... You're talking about the memorial.
Yeah.
The overturned ship.
Yeah,
the
that's underwater.
Ship.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, we didn't go there.
Oh, okay.
We went on to the real warship that's still intact.
Oh, okay.
Where the treaty was signed. The Missouri, the USS Missouri.
Okay.
So that was another warship that was integral in surrender of Japan and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really remarkable and quite amazing. But we really noticed how the sort of the war machine is an economic and PR machine. And everything that was there was reminding us how important it was that we were able to go to war and what our lives would be like if we didn't have all of this investment in these magnificent killing machines.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to ride this bus. I always complain when I go on vacations about this herd mentality where they herd you into the bus and they herd you onto the boat. Oh no, please go this way, stay inside the lines. And press this button to hear about how terrible it was when you were being shot at by the Russians, you know. So there's this whole theatrical aspect of this. And there was this story about how a girl was on the USS Arizona and she had died and her father had her ashes in his locker on the Arizona, but then the ship got bombed. And they were going to bury her, send her ashes out to sea the next day, but Pearl Harbor happened, and now she was entombed with 74 lives of the men that were on this ship. And they went into all this big sob story about, oh, how fantastic it is now. We were able to finally recognize her officially, that she's buried at sea with the other 74 servicemen who died. It's just so melodramatic to me.
Right.
And I completely understand that the lives that were lost were a tremendous tragedy and that the whole aspect of war is terrible and good people give their lives in the name of freedom. I'm not saying anything against that.
Mm-hmm.
But I recognize, I see that there's this constant PR machine reminding us how important it is that this occurs and we need to remember these people who die for our sins and all this kind of crap.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an issue with that, the constant selling of why this needs to happen to me.
They make it seem like if you were to open up that ship right now, you would see all these poor people, right? You'd see their skeletons down there or something. Mm-hmm. Certainly it's not the case. Those bodies have long since disintegrated, right?
Right.
We went to a Titanic museum and which was a load of crap, and we walked in, and they gave us the name of an actual passenger, and then at the end, they told you whether you lived or survived.
Right.
Whatever. Good Lord.
And, you know, we went to this Sea World equivalent in Hawaii.
Uh-oh.
We went to the zoo as well, which was always fun, but mm-hmm. we went to this dolphin sea life place. Of course, there was the show. Come back at 1300 for the show and see the dolphins, you know, do flips and run through hoops and yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
I always hate these things because maybe it's my years in theater, but every time I go to one of these places, I just see all of the showmanship and the theatricality, and they're just trying to sell me a bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I see. And so, you know, we go, we see the dolphins doing flips and running, and then we get this little preaching about, you know, 70,000 dolphins are killed a year by gill net trapping. Mm-hmm. You should donate to the gill net trapping fund and all that kind of crap, and the kitschy music that's played,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Bob Seger.
Bob Seger.
Gone with the Wind or whatever his song is.
What?
Not Gone with the Wind. What's his fucking... What's the most famous Bob Seger song you know?
Oh, I don't know. I'll have to look that up. Nothing's coming to mind.
Anyway, they play all this kitschy, stupid music, and while the dolphins run around and in a circle and do flips and all this kind of thing. And
I wouldn't like about that. The last time I went to a circus, which was in, you know, like 1990 or something, and I just like, I don't think bears were put on this earth to ride around on a bicycle and things right. like that. It makes me sad for these animals. Did that cross your mind?
It's disconcerting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the zoos are fun because you see all these cute animals, like the sea lions were just adorable. They were going around. They were half asleep on a rock, and one sea lion was upside down on his rock, and his head was underwater, but his body was on the rock. And he was just laying there, doo-doo-doo, sleeping, and every once in a while, he'd poke his nose up, take a breath, and then go back to sleep for 7 minutes under the water. And he'd blow bubbles, and aww. He was just laying there, sunning, and so adorable.
Uh-huh.
But by the same stretch, all these poor animals trapped in these tiny little cells tears at my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're making them do a double flip, double jump, twisty, and throw your trainer into the air, and this kind of stuff, right? And I'm going, ugh, brother.
Where else did you go and see?
Did I tell you about cooking my $40 steak?
Mm-mm.
No. So we went to this one of these extremely frustrating meet-me-at-the-restaurant reservation situations, mm-hmm. trying to corral 8 people. We went to this restaurant where you order your meal, you pay an arm and a leg for this meal, right. and they bring your food to your table raw and plonk it on the table, and then you have to go over to the grill
mm-hmm.
and put your meat on the grill. And this is supposed to be, be the best restaurant experience you'll ever have, where you stand in front of a stinking, smoking grill and try to cook your steak and not fuck it up.
Right. We've been to such a place.
So I got to experience that. And, of course, it's right on the beach, and it's an open restaurant, and the wind is blowing. And, of course, like an idiot, I take the grill that's downwind. So I'm standing in front of this grill, and all this smoke is blowing at me, and I'm dressed as nicely as I can possibly be with one of my 700 outfits that I've schlumped there in an overstuffed suitcase from Vancouver. And it's getting all smoky and greasy, and nobody told me when we were going to this fucking restaurant that I was going to have to cook my own steak. So so that was a little frustrating, but it was a good steak.
Yeah. Was it a giant grill, like there was a bunch of people just standing around?
Yeah, so there's like 20 people all milling around this grill, and
mm-hmm.
of course we got there, we had to go at the cheap time so Mr. Anderson could get the $6 deal, and that's when everybody and their fucking dog is there, so there's a lineup of people behind you. Are you done on the grill yet, mister? You know, wanting to get their steak and prawns on the grill. So it was whatever. It was another Hawaii experience. I'm making it out to be like a horrible time. I actually had a great time. I really enjoyed myself. Just to be clear, I really had a fun time.
Well, that's good. So tell us about all these clothes that you took. How many ensembles a day did you allow yourself?
It was an 8-day voyage.
Mm-hmm.
I got a suitcase that weighed 46.7 pounds was my suitcase going out.
Mm-hmm.
So I did pretty good. Like, that's a large suitcase, almost full.
Right.
So it was full of, like, I don't know, 25 bathing suits and...
20? You don't own 25 bathing suits.
Okay, 10 bathing suits and 15 underwears. Yeah.
Now, you don't live in a climate that would support you swimming, and I've never heard you talk about going to a pool. Did you just acquire all these swimsuits to go on vacation?
Listen, a gay man is never without a selection of bathing suits.
Really? Okay, if you say so.
And then, you know, 10, 12 shirts. I did take too many pants. I didn't need as many pants as I ended up taking. So that was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 pairs of shoes, toiletries and makeup and tools and equipment.
Tools and equipment? All right. Tools and equipment.
You can't go traveling without a corkscrew and a knife, like a sharp knife.
Okay.
And if you're going to eat your breakfast in your room because you're too cheap to go to the $7.95 eggs on the corner, then you need to have bowls and a spoon.
You drug bowls and spoons all the way to Hawaii.
This is my life with Mr. Anderson.
Oh, my goodness.
Listen, we weren't staying in the elite section of town. We were out there at the Junkers place.
So did you want to talk about this car that you're driving around? That was a beautiful blue car.
I had this fantastic 2014 Chevy Camaro convertible.
Mm.
I love that car. I had the best time. I was extremely impressed with that car, quite to my surprise.
I like the look of those new Camaros. Several people here in town have them. I've never seen a convertible one, though.
Right. They're very sleek.
Mm-hmm.
They have an interesting look. They've got a sort of a thick body with a high shoulder and really slim windows and passenger compartment. And, yeah, they're very futuristic looking and sexy.
Mm-hmm.
And quite nice looking cars. And the convertible is really, really quite nice.
Cool. It was an automatic.
This was an automatic. I beat the hell out of it, actually. So I was able to get it into manual mode and play. It had paddle shifters and had a good stereo, and I really enjoyed driving that car.
So it was a four-seater, basically?
Yep, four-seater. Fun car. Great car for that island. I highly recommend one.
Cool. Okay. Is there anything else you wanted to tell about what you actually did?
Before we finish, I want to talk about the flight back. The flight out was terrific, and the flight back was very frustrating.
Why?
Okay, have you ever heard of Irma Bombeck?
I sure have.
She was on my flight.
No, she wasn't.
Not only that.
She's dead. The real one's dead. This must have been her twin.
Her twin sister, in her 70s, was on my flight.
Okay.
There was this woman right beside me. I was on the aisle, but whatever. The seats beside me, across the aisle, there was this woman and her traveling companion. Now, listen, we got the short end of the stick here on the flight back, because on that flight there were 40 geriatric people. Like, you should have seen. We were waiting for the gates to open up so that you could go in and just to wait for your plane to come, because they in Hawaii they lock them off, and there's some, I don't know, there's some rule. You can't get into your gate until we let you.
Right.
You just hang around in the hallways until they decide it's time to open up the gate so you can pile in and sit in the waiting area. We're like 15 minutes from the gates opening to the waiting area, and all these, you know, the attendants in the airport who run the wheelchairs and the electric go-karts with the beep, mm-hmm. beep, beep.
Yeah.
Well, attendants start showing up in front of the gate before it's open with these old people in these wheelchairs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then a golf cart comes up with three of them on and deposits three old people there and their walkers, and they sit in their walkers or they stand patiently if they're able to stand.
Yes.
And another load comes, and like just these loads and loads of old people are showing up for our, and my God, I'm going, oh my God, it's going to take 3 hours to get all these old people on this plane.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, it was a bus tour of 40 old people coming back to Vancouver. They've been on this 2-week bus ride.
And
so here I am sitting beside Irma Bombeck. Now, this plane we're on is pretty fancy. It has on the seat in front of you, there's a little TV screen.
Right.
About the size of your tablet that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a touch screen, and it's got movies and TV programs and audio and all this kind of stuff on it, right?
Let me guess. Well, she really knew how to run that thing. She was very comfortable touching and running that.
Actually, I was impressed. She was able to run the TV screen because she got into the movie list and she read off every single fucking movie. Oh, Saving Mr. Banks. Did we watch that on the way back in? I don't know. With this one. Die Hard 2. Oh, I don't know what that's about. Have you ever heard of Die Hard 2? Oh,
she sounds like me.
So So the first 30 minutes of the flight was the list of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
She's reading off to herself. And then we have to fill out these forms, right? When you come to Canada, did you go to a farm? No, I didn't go to a farm. Do you have more than 10,000 cash? No. Do you have any shellfish? No. You know,
mm-hmm.
You got to write all this shit out. So we get these papers, and so she can't find a pen. Do you have a pen, Emily? I can't find a pen. I mean, why do they give us this thing? She goes on about this, and then, well, Sarah's dark in here. So I helped her with her light, and I realized, oh my God, I've made the worst mistake ever. I spoke to this woman.
Now you're her buddy.
I told her where to turn her light on. Now we're gonna be friends for life, right? So.
Mm-hmm. So did she talk to you?
No, actually, I was managed to avoid her. Either through my scowling or pretending to be involved in my paper.
With all these old people, was there ever a point when somebody wasn't getting up and going to the bathroom?
No, it was pretty constant. And
yes.
Even, you know what else? So, you know, everybody has a touchscreen TV on the back of their seat, right?
Mm-hmm.
An old guy behind me and his wife sitting beside him behind Mr. Anderson, they're back there. On their screens, and they're whacking the screen. I can't make this work, Helen. There's knack, and he's a tack, tack, and so we're getting a massage by these people. Oh, let me try your screen. So he's over there whacking her. And also, this was like, oh my God, this is the flight from hell. Attacked from the back, and women yakking on the side.
Well, how did they handle it when they came down the aisle and offered drinks and whatnot? Was there much conversation about what they had to offer, or were they pretty succinct?
No, these ladies were seasoned travelers. They seemed to be okay. And you know, the funny thing is, on our flight to Hawaii, we had a different crew. There were, I think probably the Hawaii flight is the choice flight when you get to be senior in the airline. This is a question for Turnip Head. You can probably choose your route, right? So mm-hmm. There's all these older ladies are on the Hawaii route, and our first flight out, they were absolutely the worst service ever. They were so slow, but they all looked like they were in their 60s. You know, they've got these computerized pin pad, type pad things, because everything, if you want anything on the plane now, you have to pay with your credit card, right?
Right.
You get a sandwich for $9, which is a piece of meat and a hunk of cheese and a bunch of bread, and they don't take cash, so tick tack tick. Oh, was that the ham and cheese or the pastrami and rye? You know, well, I don't know. You know how to work this thing? So these women, it took them hours to do the service. But the girls coming back, they were pros. Like, they were able to serve three people at the same time, and man, they were a happening unit. Like, they had the gig down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were super efficient. They beetled through that cabin in minutes. Really excellent service coming back.
What do you feel like when you walk through there and you see all those first class passengers up front? Do you automatically kind of hate them a little bit as you're passing by? Like I do?
A little bit, but I don't know if I hate them, but...
Well, I don't hate them.
I'm
resent
jealous.
Them? Yeah. Well, they pay a lot of money for those larger seats, but... It just, you really do feel like cattle when you're in the back.
You can feel that way, definitely. I've flown first class the occasional time, so I know what it's like, so I may resent them, but good on you, mate. It's kind of what I feel like. I wish I could be there.
When you were there, and you're in the middle of being there, you've been there for a couple days, you'd acclimated. Do you ever do this when you're on vacation in a weird place, or someplace that's very different from where you're from? Do you ever think, now, could I live here? Could I imagine living here? Did that cross your mind?
Definitely.
And what was your answer?
If it wasn't for the tourists, I think it would be a great place to live. You know, this is an interesting thing about traveling. I think in this day and age, the way that we travel right now in the world, it's really disconnected from the reality of the places that we go to.
Right.
Because we go to these all-inclusive resorts. In Mexico, for instance, where you don't see any Mexican people.
Mm-hmm.
Or we go to Waikiki, where it's all hotels and Gucci shopping and limousine cabs and all that kind of stuff. And that's not the real Hawaii. That's a destination location. I think we don't really experience the world properly, or as we should, as North American travelers, because all we're really doing is changing our location, but we're expecting to receive all of the service and niceties and familiar things that we're used to, like Swizzlers or whatever. Hooters. What's that seafood place?
Red Lobster?
Red Lobster, yeah.
You want...
Sizzler. What, is it Sizzler?
Oh, there is a Sizzler. We have a, yeah, you're
we,
right.
We had Sizzler in Canada.
Yeah, there's anyway. A Sizzler. But it sounded like you said Twizzler, right?
Well, I don't... Yeah, I probably did.
Is that licorice?
And even if you try to get out of the city and you go, you know, like we drove for an hour and a half out of the downtown core to get out to the real, quote, real world. Mm-hmm. But it's all... Come over to the Sugar Shack and have a shrimp on the Barbie and, you know, fried squid, and we'll make you a mango fuzzy drink. Just too commercialized. The world we live in when we go traveling is very commercialized. And, you know, I understand it in a sense, because if you want to earn a wage on Waikiki, you got to sell popsicles and
shells,
know,
with googly eyes shelled, yeah, onto them.
Shellac shells.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, Mr. Yeah. Anderson's uncle, in a sense, I kind of envy him, because he's traveled a lot. And he's the kind of guy who will go to, you know, like Guatemala for 3 months. And,
oh, wow.
You just hang out there on $900 or whatever.
Wow.
And live and be with the people and, you know, I don't know, cut corn or whatever, get some kind of cheap job that he's not supposed to have because he doesn't have a working visa, and really experience the true country. But then, you know, at the same stretch, he's the kind of guy who'll go, oh, I'm going to go to Indonesia for 6 months, so I'll see you when I get back. I don't really have the ability to do that. Or my life, I've created a life for myself where that would be more difficult.
So what was the hardest part about the vacation? Like, what I mean by that is, was it hardest part coming home, hardest part just dealing and being friendly? Make it sound like you have trouble being friendly. But there's always some part of the vacation, you know, no matter how good a time you're having, it's like something's just like, I'm tired of being in this hotel and having to go out to eat for every meal, or, you know, there's something ends up rubbing you the wrong way. Did you have anything like that?
You know, the hardest part for me on doing vacations is the preparation beforehand and then the de-preparation after it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's all this organizing to do before we can go. We got to get the dog to the kennel. We got to get this here. We got to pack. You got to make sure all the bills are paid. You got to touch base with all these people. I'm going to be gone. If you need to reach me, I'm not here. I'm going to call this person. All of that organizing and getting prepared to go, to be able to leave, and the getting there. I always have a great deal of stress in the traveling to the destination. Mm-hmm. Mr. Anderson doesn't like to fly, so the flight is always stressful for him, so that means it's stressful for me. When the whole thing's over and you finally get home, now you've got 3 days of laundry to do, and I've got a stack of mail to get through, and got to deal with my cars, and there's all this stuff to do, all this tasks and chores and organizing now that it's over and I got to get back into the normal stream of life.
Yeah.
That I've been gone for the last 7 to 8 days. That's the hardest part for me, is all of that stuff. And I know, in a sense, I kind of do it to myself, because I always feel like I need to be prepared for everything. Do I have my tickets? Is everything printed? Do I have... Got to get the money. Oh, we got to go to the bank. We can't go to the bank because it's a Saturday. I got to do the bank on the Wednesday, or else, and then I'm going to be working for 3 days. So do the Wednesday, or else, and then when you get up on Saturday, you won't have time to do that and this. You got to make sure this is done. So all this logistics drives me crazy.
How did Mr. Anderson do with being away from Maximus?
He did good. What made that nicer is that the place we were, the the kennel we send him to would send pictures every day. They post a picture on Facebook of your dog looking pitiful. So some days I couldn't show him the picture. Look how happy Max is. But some days you could say, oh, look, they put a picture of Max up. Look how happy he is. And Mr. Anna would say, he looks sad. He misses me. No, he doesn't. He's probably forgotten all about you.
Oh, no. What was the reunion like? Tell me first how Max reacted. Oops, sorry. And then tell me how Mr. Anderson reacted when you picked him up.
I was impressed. The last time we went away and we kenneled Max, we put him in a not very good place. And he seemed to be a little disjointed when he got home. Mm-hmm. But this time, I think they took really good care of Max. So there was a lot of human interaction for him. Mm-hmm. So I think he probably had quite a nice time. He was very relaxed when he came home. He wasn't freaking out. He wasn't nervous like he is sometimes when we've been gone a long time. It was a very successful kenneling of the dog. Mm-hmm. And within a couple of days, Mr. Anderson had been interacting with his dog, and he realized fairly soon that the dog wasn't nearly as traumatized as he was the last time we went away. Mm-hmm. Overall, it was a fairly good experience.
Well, good.
I have to say, you know, I make out like I don't really care that much about my dog, but, you know, he's a very important part of our family. Mm-hmm. And I was very nervous, and it was difficult for me to leave him too, because I don't like my dog to be with other people, or there's always this nervousness about leaving your dog with someone or leaving him for a long time. And I was worried, but it turned out okay.
Yeah. I see the way you look at your dog. I never thought that it was not important to you, Max.
Yeah.
I'm glad that nobody was too traumatized. I wondered about how Mr. Anderson would do, because it seems like Max is a really big calming agent in his life, you know? Mm-hmm. Kind of a therapy-type dog for him. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
You're absolutely correct. Max is a big part of Mr. Anderson's happiness.
Mm-hmm. The way he treats him and talks to him, and he's so delicate when he pets him and he calms him, and he's just, you know, this is his baby. And sometimes I think that's good, because then I do it too, you know. When you have a cluttered mind, an animal is a good thing to distract you from your cluttered mind. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, and you're absolutely correct. That's how it is for Mr. Anderson, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, Max is hard not to like, too. When you say sometimes he's nervous, I just can't even imagine him being nervous. He just always looks like he's on Quaaludes.
True. He does.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, let's see. I think I asked you all the questions I wanted to ask. Oh, the last one was, were you ready to come home then at the end?
I think so. Yes, I would say yes, I was ready to come home. I think if we would have stayed at a nicer place, like Mr. Anderson's so cheap, he wanted to find the cheapest deal possible, and that's good. And, you know, I don't mind people being frugal, and it's good to be as responsible with your money as you can. But at the same time, I think my feeling is this is a kind of a major vacation. Mm-hmm. We only do these sorts of things maybe once a year, or more likely twice a year. Just bust out another $10 or $15 a night. Right?
Right.
I wish we could have. I would have liked to have just a slightly nicer hotel. I would have enjoyed that a lot more. Mm-hmm. Which is not to say that our hotel was horrible. It was perfectly good, and I agree, we weren't there the whole time, but pay $110 a night for a room the size of a large bedroom is really what it is. You should have seen the place that the other Andersons had. Oh. One of them has a timeshare deal, so they had this really nice place at the Hilton. Mind you, it was a lot more than $100 a night, but...
Well. Oh, well. Did you take lots of pictures?
No. This is the whole point of my annoying photo journal of vacation.
Yeah.
It's my ironic slight at people who post nonsense crap on the internet about what they're doing.
Mm.
Totally opposed to this kind of, oh, look where I am. I've got my room key. Yoo-hoo. Do-do-do. Aren't I special? Look where I am. I'm on the beach. Click. Pa-ching, pa-ching. Oh, I hate the Instagram people who I almost took a shot of my meal, like I was almost to the point of taking food shots. But I thought, I can't do it because I hate people who take pictures of their food like you wouldn't believe, yeah. Scotty Ozzy Battler. But I was gonna.
Yeah.
Annoying photojournal of my overcooked steak.
I could tell there was a small progression of your face with those few pictures that you put up. Because at the beginning, you looked very happy and relaxed. And by the last picture you put out, your face had definitely changed.
I have had enough.
That's pretty much what it looked like. I showed their picture to Eric. I said, oh, look, it's their last picture. I said, I've seen that face before. He's not looking as happy as he was before. It's hard to be on vacation.
It is. You'd think that the vacation should be the happiest time of your life, when really it seems to be such a painful experience. Yeah, there's a lot of anticipation wrapped up in this. Oh, this is my only vacation of the year. It's got to be good. Mm-hmm. We've got to make sure it's fantastic. Right?
Right.
I want to be clear. This actually was one of the best vacations I've had in a long time. So I did enjoy myself. I did have a good time. I enjoyed my car. I enjoyed my family. And on day 7, when it was time to go home, it was just the right amount of fun in the sun and family time. And I made it. The fuse burnt out right at the perfect time.
That's good. I thought you really looked like you were having a good time. I was happy for you.
Yeah, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything else you want to say?
I don't think so. I think we covered quite a bit here.
Okay.
We saw fireworks twice.
Oh, cool.
And one time I was nabbed, caught in the nude, watching them.
What?
There was fireworks was on at this one place, and the whole family went down there for the fireworks. That was one of our big event nights.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody dispersed, and then the second night, Mr. Anderson and I were in our room, just relaxing, and I had just come out of the tub, and I was in no clothes. And of course, we had a view, and we happened to be pointing towards where the fireworks were going on this one particular night. The only tricky thing is, right outside of our window is the window for the elevator lobby. There were a bunch, and it was dark, so lights were on in my room, so I could see into the elevator lobby. And I'm pretty sure the elevator lobby could see into my room, and I'm just standing there all balls out, watching the fireworks. Oh, look at the fireworks! La 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 la! And Mr. Anderson's going, hey, there's people in the elevator. Oh, okay. Step back a couple feet.
Good Lord.
Grasp a towel. So that was fun. I enjoyed that.
Good Lord. See, yeah, generally speaking, if it's dark outside and you have lights on inside, that you're just pointing a spotlight right onto your...
Yeah, but you know, I mean, there's 8,000 other rooms that are lit up, all with naked people standing in them, I think.
Oh, wow.
At the right place at the right time.
8,000 of them, eh?
Well, there's hotels everywhere you look down there, right? All these sky-rise hotels.
Right. And they're all just... buck naked, standing there.
I think there's a high chance that if you're looking at the right place at the right time, you're going to find a naked person in their apartment or their hotel. And I ain't afraid to show it.
Oh, mercy. Well, as I look out the studio here at the Mitzpah Hotel, I see that it's cloudy. The temperature is 55 degrees. So.
A much cooler temperature than Waikiki.
Yes. All right. Well, tell everybody where they can contact us if they want, please.
You can email us at fayandbrenda@gmail.com or call our listener line at
319-535-0266. Okay. Thank you for sharing your vacation with us. That sounded like a lot of fun.
Thanks. My pleasure. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Seems like yesterday. yesterday. It was long ago. Jane, it was lovely. She was as a queen of my night. There in the darkness with the radio playing low and the secrets that we shared. Mountains that we moved. Nothing left to prove. And I remember what she said to me, how she swore that it never would end. I remember how she held me oh so tight. Wish I didn't know now what I didn't know then. Against the wind, we were running against the wind. We were young and strong, we were running against the wind. The years rolled slowly past, and I found myself alone, surrounded by strangers I thought were my friends. Found myself further and further from my home, and I guess I lost my way. There were oh so many roads. I was living to run and running to live. Never worried about paying or even how much I owed. Moving 8 miles a minute for months at a time. Breaking all myself searching, searching for shelter again and again. Against the wind, little something against the wind. I found myself seeking shelter.